is a Bramble Jam podcast. Hi, I'm Bran, and I love Christmas movies, straight up, no disclaimer.
I'm Alonzo, and I love making Bran watch Christmas classics he's never seen before, and this
is a Deck the Hallmark podcast. I gotta tell you, Alonzo, it may just be March, but I'm feeling the Christmas spirit. I've unlocked Pandora's box. I'm back into Christmas music. It's just all happening all at once for me. I don't know what it was. There was something about, it was March 16th. There was something about that date that made me go, what are we waiting for? Let's just do this thing.
Yeah, I think, you know, even those of us who are, Christmassier than others, maybe kind of need January, even February off.
Yeah.
But we can never stray for too long.
So what I typically do is I'll listen to Christmas music through the new year, and then I'll stop. Mm-hmm. And right. I'll just see how long I can make it. Now, in prior years, I've made it to like May, but there was something, it just happened.
The shake set in.
I was in my car and I said, you know what? To heck with it. I'm doing it today. I want it today. And maybe it was the fact that on that day I watched Miracle on 34th Street.
Could be.
I don't know.
It's got that kind of power.
It does have that kind of power. But how are you doing? Are you in the same boat, or are you kind of...
Oh yeah, no, for sure. I have already, ducked back into the SiriusXM Holiday Traditions channel.
So, that was my gateway drug. What happened was I got a new vehicle, and for the first time ever, I have Apple CarPlay, and I was going through the apps, and I was like, oh, I have the XM app in here. I clicked that, and then the rest was history.
Yeah, you're sunk.
I'm sunk at that point. Movie critic Alonzo Duralde, how's life for you? Is it busy right now? Is there a lot of movies you're having to fit in that you missed the first time? What's going on in your world?
Yeah, mix of things. I am definitely catching up on stuff as it hits streaming that I was not going to in theaters. But yesterday, I went to a movie.
Uh-oh. It's happening, everybody. The pandemic's over. You heard it here first.
Well, no. I kept my mask on the whole time. But I did. I went to an afternoon matinee of The Batman.
Uh-huh. I saw it this past weekend as well.
Yeah, and it was a pretty empty theater, and were movies always this loud? I'm out of practice, and so I was like, what?
This is louder than my TV speaker.
Exactly.
I'm not used to this.
My neighbors would never go for this kind of thing, so.
What'd you think of The Batman?
I admire it more than I love it, but I thought it had some really cool ideas. I think mainly I just loved the idea. I loved the way that the movie was able to convey the notion of, we're so used to the idea of Batman at this point. And then, right. Of course, yes, he's there and he fights crime and blah, blah, blah. But the movie really captures the idea of what a room full of cops would feel like if this guy in a bat costume shows up in the middle of an investigation. They're like, really? He's here? I liked that. I liked how it was able to make us see that character through new eyes. So that was my favorite.
And I also appreciated that this was an origin story, but we fast forwarded the first 2 years. Like, I appreciated that. Like, we didn't need that part again. So it was nice. We still had the origin-ness of it and things that he's still learning, but
didn't have to kill the parents for once, which was nice. And I agree with Glenn Weldon at NPR. I think they goof on the Batman origin thing so effectively. Did you see Teen Titans Go to the Movies?
I did not, but I've heard it's wonderful.
They have a crime alley sequence that is hilarious. Really? And so it's like, and it's like, okay, we can't do this again for a while, because it's become such a cliche now to kill Batman's parents and the way we do it that we have to just knock it off. And so I'm glad this movie didn't even bother to try and take us there. So good for them.
I loved it personally. Good. Which, I'm not, I usually am like, superheroes are hit or miss for me. And, but this one, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And maybe, it is like, still like theater is feeling still fresh, but sure. The Batmobile scene, shoot, forget about it.
Pretty rocking. Did it need to be 3 hours?
I am of the opinion that nothing needs to be 3 hours. If only for the reason that it's just hard to afford a babysitter at that point.
Sure. Like, no, I get
if I'm
it.
Trying to fit in a whole like dinner and then a 3 hour blockbuster, forget about it. I can't do all of that, or else we're going to have to raise Bramble Jam Plus subscription prices, and we can't do that either. Those are already too high.
Look, I eat a 3 hour movie for breakfast, like drive my car, give it to me. But 3 hours of Batman, I don't know. I think they could have told us everything they needed to tell us in less. But, that's just me.
I'm not the type of person that needs to watch all the Best Picture movies. It doesn't I honestly don't care about awards. It does nothing for me. But which of the Best Picture nominees would you suggest for brand? Maybe not what the best one is, but which one should I watch?
Oh, for brand. No question. That would be a West Side Story.
So here's the thing. I have a really hard time with watching movies at home. And when they were in the theaters, and I didn't get to that one in the theaters, same issue, 3 hours long. It was just it was during the holiday season in January, yeah. And it was just tough. I didn't get to it. So now that it's out on Disney Plus, I can't find it in me to do it because I know I missed it in the theaters, but I know I need to because everybody tells me it's so good. And I love West Side Story.
Yeah. Well, look, when your very young children leave the house to go see the Batman, then you can have that time to yourself to watch West Side
Story. That's exactly right. If you're not bringing your 4-year-old to Batman, what are you doing? What are you even doing? We're doing Miracle on 34th Street today, and we're doing it next week as well. 1947, 1994. And I'm very excited to talk about it. I'm excited to talk about this one today because I had never seen it. I had only seen the 94 version. Mm-hmm. And I talked about last week how I always felt like I had to hold that close to the vest and not share that information because I am a Christmas lover. I'm a fanatic. I've made a career out of Christmas. And to not have seen the 1947 Miracle on 43rd, you got it. It felt like people were, I was going to lose my job somehow. So I just had to hold that close.
Brand, you're only as sick as your secrets. And so now you no longer have to hide that from the world because you've seen the 1947 version.
I feel so free. But very excited to talk about it. Alonzo, will you give us a little synopsis and we'll dive in?
Absolutely. Miracle on 34th Street opened in the summer of 1947.
And we'll
talk about why. And it went a little something like this. When the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade Santa gets drunk, store higher-up Doris Walker gets lucky with the sudden appearance of Kris Kringle, who steps in at the last minute. Kringle is such a great Santa, he even brings his own costume, that he gets a full-time job at Macy's. Kringle, however, insists that he's the real Santa, much to the chagrin of store psychologist Mr. Sawyer. As for Doris's precocious daughter, Susan, she doesn't believe in Santa at all, having been raised by Doris to see the world in absolutes. Kris eventually teaches Susan to use her imagination for the first time. Kris becomes the subject of a sanity hearing, and lawyer Fred Gailey, Doris's next-door neighbor who is courting her, goes all out to prove that his client is none other than the real Santa Claus. And that, my friends, was Miracle on 34th Street.
Fantastic, Alonzo. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll break this movie down, share our thoughts right here on Deck the Homework. We're back, and it feels good on a Monday to be talking about Miracle on 34th Street. Let's break it down. Let's share our thoughts on it. Let's start with the hot take. You can go first. You've seen it before, but kind of talk about why, obviously it's a classic, but talk a little bit about that and your thoughts on the movie.
Weirdly enough, this was one I did not watch that much as a kid. I part of why I wrote a book about Christmas movies in the first place was, there's something for, look, I grew up in an era before the internet. I grew up in an era largely, we didn't get a VCR till I was in high school. We didn't have cable till I was in high school. So I was kind of reliant upon not just sort of like a handful of TV channels, but also sort of like what my family, you know, what our traditions were, what our media was, you know. So like we grew up in a house with like four Christmas albums, you know. It was like Bing, Andy Williams, Dean Martin, and like the Boston Pops.
And that is all you need, to be fair.
I mean, it's a good starter kit for sure. But like as an adult to discover like, oh, what, Ella Fitzgerald, you know, like all this other stuff. That was really exciting for me to kind of add to my, you know, sort of repertoire of holiday stuff. And it was the same with movies. Like we were definitely in It's a Wonderful Life household, and maybe sometimes like White Christmas and, you know, We're No Angels, like a handful of these movies, but like Miracle on 34th Street was not one of them. So it wasn't until later in life that I kind of was able to track it down on my own and fall in love with it. But you know, I watched it again this week for the show, and I still find it moving and funny and you know, but there were a couple times where I kind of caught myself getting, you know, sort of verklempt, you know. And so yeah, I just think it's really effective, and again, as we always talk about when we get into the Christmas feels, you know, that there's the sort of outward facing performative, like how many lights, how much tinsel, how many trees Christmas, but there's also that Christmas spirit, that notion of, you know, finding your best self and reaching out to other people and being there for them. And I think that movie, this movie delivers that just like in abundance.
This is a Christmas movie, folks. And there's no, you can make argument about all sorts of movies, including ones that I watch every year, that they take place at Christmas. There's nostalgia with it, but is it really a Christmas movie? Like the Die Hard conversation can extend to Home Alone. Like it's just a kid doing pranks on people and there's Christmas music and it's at Christmas time. This is unmistakably a Christmas movie and it is so dang good. Like,
gosh. Oh yay.
Oh my goodness. So good. Santa Claus. He's the real one. Like there is no doubt about it. Like so good. And I mean the 1994 Santa also great, but this is just above and beyond. Like I was like, how'd they get Santa for this? Like
that I have this series of books that a critic named Danny Peary wrote called Cult Movies, and talking about Miracle on 34th Street, he says that like Santa Claus, borrowing Edmund Gwenn's SAG card, plays himself in this movie.
Right, absolutely, that's what it felt like. And there's so much to love about the movie. I found the having only seen 94, and it's going to be hard not to compare it. I'm trying to wait until
sure, no, of course.
But
of course.
The at the end when they bring all the cards in, and it's just one person after another, and they throw it on the desk, and it's like that's just such a great scene. It's so funny, and it's just fantastic. So I loved it. You know, didn't love the way the two adults met at the beginning of this movie. That, you know, saying the best way to meet a mom is to hang out with the daughter. Not great. Don't love that. Made me feel weird inside. But overall,
it was a different time.
Different time. Overall, just really lovely. And I hate, similar to It's a Wonderful Life, I hate that I waited so long in my life to watch the original.
You know, look, it is never too late. I always hear people who they're like embarrassed, they haven't seen something or whatever. And I don't judge anybody for that stuff, because believe me, there's still movies that I haven't gotten to. Like everybody has the holes in their cinematic education, but like, you know, just get to it at some point and enjoy it and take the pleasure of it and don't have regrets about, you know, when you got to it. Just get in there.
A quick detour, just because, and you might not actually know the answer to this, but you were bringing, you're talking about the music that you listened to early on and how you found out about other music later. Do you remember, like now there are channels all across the country that switch to Christmas all year or all season 24/7. When did Christmas music become, and you might not know this, but when did it become the type of thing that it is now, where it's like just a commercial juggernaut and there's radio stations that are switching at Halloween, like Hallmark?
I mean, it goes back decades. I think the idea of like established performers putting out a Christmas album, I mean, that goes back to like, I don't know, probably the 40s, I guess. But as far as like radio stations doing the switchover, that was a thing that somehow I was never aware of it as a child. Although I do remember one time, I have this distinct memory as a little kid like we were driving around and visiting people on Christmas Day, and we were at somebody's house, and there was like, they were listening to Christmas music, and I realized it was on the radio, and I was like, wait, what? That's a thing? And then like, I never thought about pursuing it after that. But obviously that's been happening for a while now. So
this is one of those movies though, that I feel like it isn't on as much during the holiday season. Like It's a Wonderful Life is on all the time. And I know part of that is the copyright thing, which we've talked about a little bit. But what is kind of the history of this movie? I know you mentioned it came out in the summer, but the success of it or the popularity of it, has it always been there? Why do I feel like I don't see it on TV as much during the holiday season?
Yeah, I don't know the answer to that, because it never went into any sort of weird copyright thing the way It's Wonderful Life or Remember the Night or other films that we've talked about did. And it, like I said, it did win an Academy Award for Edmund Gwenn. So I think it was it was a hit when it came out, and it was, you know, won an Oscar. So I think it's always been regarded as a classic. But it hasn't had the full court press that other Christmas movies have gotten in recent years. Although I think, you know, having the occasional remake, like in 94, which is not the first remake, by the way. We'll talk about that next week. Yeah. You know, I think that sort of like helped it along the way. Like, even now, you know, there's this weird Disney Fox thing where Disney, you know, bought 20th Century Fox, of course, but like there's still other deals with, like, that's why, streaming for services. Example, exactly. Yeah. So like right now, like you could watch, you know, Nightmare Alley on HBO Max in addition to on Hulu, and you could watch, I think, West Side Story is also on HBO Max in addition to Disney Plus. And yeah, so like Miracle on 34th Street, when Disney Plus launched, was there, but now it's on HBO Max. So it's like you do have to kind of chase this movie around a bit. But no, the story I do know is that when the movie came out in 1947, Daryl Zanuck, who was running Fox at the time, did not think that people went to the movies in significant numbers at Christmas. And, you know, that's obviously something that's changed over the years.
Christmas Day is a big premiere.
Exactly. Yeah. Christmas season is where they, you know, they'll drop a lot of big movies because people are out of school and, you know, off work, whatever. But at the time, the conventional wisdom was people don't go to the movies enough at Christmas time. So they released it in the summer. And not only did they release it in the summer, go to YouTube and watch the trailer, the original trailer for this movie. It's kind of hilarious, because what they do is they basically send this like reporter guy around the 20th Century Fox lot, and he talks to different actors, like, you know, Ann Baxter, and like recognizable actors to audiences who were under contract with the studio, and they're all talking about this movie. And the point of the trailer is, well, one person says, oh, it's a great comedy, and somebody else says, oh no, it's a moving drama, and somebody says, oh, I loved the love story, and blah blah blah. Like they approach all the different things that this movie is. But they don't talk about Santa Claus. They don't talk about Christmas. Like they don't. The holiday part does not come up at all. But it's all these other genres that they want to sell you on. So it's just this weird thing of like, let's talk about this movie, but not really talk about what this movie actually is or is about, which now makes no sense. But at the time, again, they just thought, well, Christmas, that's not a selling point for movies. So we'll just skirt around that.
It's a real we don't talk about Bruno situation, where the whole song
we don't talk about Santa.
But here it is. That's fascinating. I was thoroughly thrilled. And I really... there's enough differences, and then we'll talk more about it next week, but there's enough differences to where I feel like watching both of them isn't redundant during the holiday season. Like they both kind of add a little something to it. So excited to talk about the next one next week. Let's talk about feels, Christmas spirit, if you will. Alonzo.
I always, always cry when the little Dutch girl comes to see Sinterklaas, because that I think there's a larger like article or doctoral thesis or something to be written about what did these 1947 movies, because we've seen several of them now, what do they say about how America was kind of readjusting to life after World War II?
Right.
Because I think this whole movie, if you look at it, it's about cynicism, and it's about like childlike wonder, like, do children get to be children, even, you know, like after they have witnessed what they have witnessed and living in a world where these horrors have been visited upon mankind, do children get to still escape into fantasy and use their imagination and have faith in miracles or in the unexplained, or do they have to be like written? And so much of this movie, whether it's the way the psychologist is, whether it's about, you know, Susan being very, like, you know, hard-nosed about pragmatism and realism until, you know, Chris sort of opens up her imagination. You know, the shoppers being so shocked that, like, Macy's would actually send them to another store because no store ever does that. Like, this movie, I think, has a lot to say about just what humanity and what America was like at the time, and also what movies always kind of tell us about ourselves, or at least tell us about ourselves as we'd like to think of ourselves. And so I really think this is it's a timeless movie, but at the same time, it's very much a movie of its moment. And so to me, the Dutch girl who was like a war refugee and all the stuff that she's been through, but she's it just that moment of delight where, like, it's Sinterklaas and he speaks Dutch to her. And the thing that she says that isn't subtitled in the movie, he asks her what she wants for Christmas. And she says, "I don't need anything. I have this home now."
Oh,
and it just, oh God, it just rips me apart every time. And there's several moments like that in the film, you know, at the end when Doris admits that she does believe in Chris, that part always kills me. And so again, Christmas feels, this is about, you know, yes, you do get to see the actual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade of 1946, I guess, when they shot this. And Edmund Gwenn was, in fact, their Santa Claus.
Oh, wow.
And so yeah, exactly. Yeah, they just went in and shot the whole thing.
That's one way to do it.
Yeah, and I learned from Christmas Past, Brian Earle talked about how, like, this movie made the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade like a big national deal.
Really?
It used to just be kind of a regional thing, but after this movie, that's when you started seeing it on, you know, telecast around the country. But anyway, so yeah, I feel like this movie is giving me all that Christmas and also all the sort of emotional Christmas of you know, people being there for each other, you know, all the stuff with Albert. Come on.
Is this the first, because we've seen it since, like, one that comes to mind is Noel, where Anna Kendrick goes in and she knows sign language suddenly because she's Santa Claus.
Right.
Is this like the first iteration of that, of Santa being this, like that's how he's communicating? Like, he
can speak anything? I think this is the first movie that I know of where the idea of, like, well, of course Santa speaks all the languages because he's there for all the children, you know.
But in it's
the
world. So good.
Yes. Oh man, they sell that moment, and that Susan is watching it happen.
Yes.
You know, so it just all
seeing the wonder in her eye.
Yes.
Not just one of them, both eyes.
Both.
Is so good. Like, yeah, that's such a great scene. And I just think that this movie, like, this is a 10 out of 10 Christmas spirit. Like, this is a Christmas movie, like, from start to finish. It's not just a movie that takes place around the holiday season. It's centered around Santa Claus and the spirit of Christmas. So This is the Christmas movie, you know, right?
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And, you know, like, in addition to all the remakes, like, this is the reason that the department store in Elf is Gimbel's,
right?
Is this movie, because Gimbel's no longer exists. It went, they went bankrupt sometime in like the '80s, I think.
So they used two real stores.
Yeah. Like the Mr. Macy is a fictional character, right. But yeah, Macy's and Gimbel's were like big rivals in New York City at that time. And again, a real life consequence of this movie, Macy's started hiring. They would have a woman in the store named Christine Kringle, and she would send customers to other stores if they had, like, that's other wild items or better prices. Yeah. So again,
nowadays Gimbel's sues, right? Because this is like it does, you know, Macy's is getting like great promotion out of this. And then Gimbel's we don't have the real Santa.
Yeah, take my name out of your mouth. Right. Yeah.
That's wild that they're in the real store.
Yeah, but that's why Elf is they use the Gimbel's name as a callback to this movie.
That's great. Would you give this a 10 out of 10 on a Christmas?
Oh, no question. Yeah. Yes.
Let's do comparisons. Does anything come to mind aside from the remakes? I mean, I guess Noel kind of. It's, you know, there are elements of it. Noel takes from a lot of, like, there's Elf aspects of Noel.
Sure.
But it's a miracle, and I like the movie. I think it's really quite charming.
Yeah. Noel is fun. I'll tell you, I would actually really say Elf. And in fact, go back and dig up the A Film and a Movie episode that Daniel and I did about Miracle on 34th Street and Elf and the connections about how those movies tell stories. I think there's something specific about the idea of, you know, Hallmark, as we know, loves a small town getting together on Christmas. But if you can win over like jaded New Yorkers to the holiday spirit and to believing in Santa, then you've really accomplished something. And I think both of these movies sort of tackle like, what is Christmas in Manhattan look like exactly? And how do people feel about it?
I'm trying to think. I feel like there's a Hallmark movie that kind of centers around like saving a department store with Christmas.
There's Christmas at Cartwright's, which is the one where Alicia Witt is the cross-dressing Santa Claus. But what's the one with Julie? And the guy from Gilmore Girls, where the department store hires a new Santa Claus, and it turns out he actually is Santa.
Ooh, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I do. I do know what you're talking about. A Bride for Christmas?
No.
Why did it? I typed in a Hallmark Channel Gilmore Girls actor, and it's
Charming Christmas from 2015.
Charming Christmas. Let me see this. This is really great audio. Charming Christmas.
I know. IMDb says when a young businesswoman plays Mrs. Claus at her family's
Christmas,
her life begins to take some unexpected turns. So yeah, that's your pick. I think
that's a great movie. As I recall but maybe
not. Let's not throw great around too willy-nilly.
It's a great Hallmark Christmas movie.
Okay, fair enough. Yes, that's standard.
I haven't watched it in a couple of years, though. I need to.
This is one of the ones, I think this was the year before I really started watching them, but this is one of the ones when my friend Bibbs, friend of the show, started telling me that I needed to be watching these movies. I think this was the one that he described the plot of. It's like, okay, and then. So indirectly, it kind of dragged me into all this.
I need to, hopefully that airs during Christmas in July, because then we can, that's one of the ones we haven't covered still.
Oh, indeed it's not, yeah.
But we're trying, Christmas in July, we try to cover ones that are on during July, and they play a lot of the past year, and so
exactly, yeah,
we're running out. Like last year, it was really hard to find that many Hallmark movies that we hadn't covered because they don't play a ton of the older ones during July.
True, you might have to maybe cheat and say, "Oh, well, it's on Hallmark movies now,"
or just Hallmark make drama a Christmas channel. Right?
It's just sitting there. Come on.
I have pushed it as hard as I can. Anybody that I talk to from the network that I have the opportunity to just say, drama's dumb. Make it Christmas. I try to say it a little bit nicer.
Or at least just make it more than a once a week Christmas thing like the other channels does. Cause I mean, they don't do any, even during this past Christmas, they didn't do any during the actual season. And I don't get what the threat
drama is where the Waltons went for the holiday season.
Waltons and Little House, like
that's right.
in perpetuity.
It's tough. All right. Next week, Miracle on 34th Street, 1994. It's 94. Also on Max, I believe.
Okay.
I think. Am I wrong?
I hadn't looked it up yet, but...
But in the description of this episode, I'll put the film and a movie episode that you referenced for some further listening. Yes, Miracle on 34th Street, 1994 edition is what we're going to be covering next week. And then I think we're back to regularly scheduled programming of
yes,
swapping.
And I've got my classic ready to go for the following week, but we'll get into that later when you're allowed to know what it is.
Can't wait. Until then, may we be the first to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Deck the Hallmarks of Bramble Jam podcast. It's presented by Philo TV. It's produced by Brandon Gray and recorded live in, Greenville, South Carolina. Set decor is by Plum at Haywood Mall. For more information on Deck the Hallmark, you can go to deckthehallmark.com. For more information on Bramble Jam Podcast Network, you can go to bramblejampodcast.com.